censorship and shadow banning. Shadow banning is the practice of restricting social media content that is not noticeable to the user. While companies like Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube once styled themselves protectors of free speech given the highly publicized use of their platforms, their actions over the following years have proved otherwise. As the Electronic Frontier Foundation noted in 2020, rampant censorship on social media is targeted against the very same regions these platforms initially used to promote their ostensible values of free speech. When pressed in the past, social media companies provided vague responses that only focused on technical issues and did not adequately explain the high rate and diverse types of censorship documented by rights advocates, according to the Palestinian digital rights group Hamle. The targeting of WOL's Instagram account shows that we need to whitewash our history as an organization in order to survive on social media. These actions show there is a limit to how much history, culture, and politics you're allowed to express, WOL chair Nardin Keswani told the Electronic Entawasa. Keswani explained that the post initially received a disciplinary action called a strike from Instagram, which she said was common. Historically, she explained, Instagram would strike WOL post with no clear pattern. The company even flagged a January post about a Palestinian prisoner, Hesham Abu Hawash, being infected with COVID-19 while in the Zionist regime hospital. Why should we assume that a post about a Palestinian prisoner getting COVID is going to get a strike? Keswani said. Keswani explained that the Women's Day post not only received a strike, but Instagram also sent a warning that the entire WOL account could be deleted permanently. Following this warning, WOL organizers found themselves unable to access the account. They launched a social media campaign to pressure Instagram to restore the account and on March 12th received an email from Instagram saying only that the account had been disabled by mistake and it would be restored. WOL stated, while the restoration of our main account following a massive outpouring of support from our comrades and supporters around the world marks a victory, we know that Instagram continues to uphold anti-Palestinian racism and actively works directly with our oppressors to silence us. But activists noted that Instagram's lack of transparency and seemingly arbitrary punitive measures indicate that the platform remains an embattled site for liberation-focused political messaging about Palestine. A member of the grassroots organization Palestinian Youth Movement, who asked to remain anonymous, told the Electronic Entefada that the group has had its social media activity heavily challenged since at least 2018, when Facebook began disappearing their posts about protest for the 70th anniversary of the Nakba. The PYM member explained, we wouldn't have the option to invite people to the protest, and we continued receiving messages saying that our page was not being recommended to people. The digital repression escalated in May 2021, when PYM began working with the Yemeni Liberation Movement on actions including a hunger strike opposing U.S. support for the Saudi-led blockade against the Yemeni people. The PYM member mentioned that after the collaboration with the Yemeni movement, their social media began to experience heavy shadow banning, to the point that PYM organizers would have to manually instruct followers to seek out their group's posts, which were not visible to them otherwise. While one can only speculate about the precise reasons for such restrictions, Instagram itself has admitted to limiting the visibility of the content it deems inappropriate even when the posts in question don't run afoul of the platform's community guidelines. Laura L. Borno is a Palestinian-American lawyer and podcast host who uses social media to call attention to the Palestinian liberation struggle. She told the Electronic Intifada that her personal Instagram account swelled to more than 40,000 followers after the world's attention turned to the Zionist regime's planned expulsions of Palestinian families in Sheikh Jarrah and the Zionist regime's attacks on Gaza in May 2021. She said, "But with more followers came increased repression. Several of my posts would be deleted by Instagram for alleged hate speech or violence." She says that some of the deleted posts included images of Zionists calling for a second Nakba and a photo of her brother-in-law's apartment building in Gaza after it had been struck by an Israeli regime airstrike. "Surely Instagram's guidelines cannot possibly be intended to prevent victims of violence and hate speech from sharing their experiences," El Borno said. Adding, "Every time I appealed Instagram's censorship of my post, Instagram would restore my post, saying it never should have been deleted in the first place." El Borno explained that her posts were also subjected to shadow banning and had received frequent threats of deletion from Instagram. Despite none of her posts violating the company's guidelines, she also began losing hundreds of followers. El Borno provided several examples of social media repression to a Human Rights Watch report on the issue. On March 8, Instagram deleted the account for El Borno's podcast, The Palestine Pod. The platform initially provided no reason for the deletion, she said. Instagram even initially refused to review the deletion of the account due to El Borno's inability to provide company documents like articles of incorporation or a utility bill, documents which Instagram said they required in order to restore the account. "These documents do not exist," El Borno explained, as the Palestinian Pod is a self-produced podcast show. Only after launching a social media campaign through the host's own individual accounts, as well as outreach on their behalf by the civil rights group Palestine Legal, was the account restored. El Borno and her co-host, Michael Scherzer, were informed by an email from Instagram's corporate office that the account was flagged for suspicious behavior either by scrapping information from Instagram, using an app or service to interact with Instagram in unauthorized ways, or because the account was shared or compromised. But again, none of the reasons were applicable to the podcast Instagram account activities. And once it was restored, El Borno and Scherzer received dozens of messages from fans who said they had been involuntarily kicked off of the account's followers list.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You are welcome to For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. Well, I'm going to talk with you and to discuss with you, brothers and sisters, about our complete dependence on Allah. In our being, in our existence, and in our life, we are completely dependent on Allah. Allah is our creator. And this existence or this life that we have is given to us by Allah alone. We are not self-existent. We cannot survive without His will. We are also dependent on the material conditions. We cannot exist without water, without air, without food, without light, without a certain temperature and so on. We are dependent on them, but originally we were created by Allah alone. And of course, we cannot have a comfortable life without the help of other members of the society as well. No one can produce for himself whatever he needs of clothes, shelter, furniture, etc. You know, man is a social being. He interacts with others. He gives and he receives. There is give and take relationship with other people. So with the progress and development of human societies, these needs increase day by day. We are dependent on our Creator and His blessings in the material universe and in the social universe as well. Our worldview is based on the fact that the universe and what is in it cannot survive without God. And it cannot survive without God sustaining it. If Allah ignores the world, it will cease to exist. The same is the case with us. We cannot survive, we cannot live if Allah does not pay attention to us. For a second, if Allah ignores us, we will cease to exist. In our knowledge and understanding, we are not needless. We are not needless. With the God-given intellect that we have, every human being is able to understand many facts such as the truth of the religion, the existence of Allah, and to acquire some easy and simple information about the nature and the environment around him. With his God-given conscience, every human being understands the general rules of morality. Justice is good, oppression is bad, you know, he understands it. This theoretical and practical knowledge is common between men in primitive societies and men in advanced societies as well. But what makes us different from those early people, from the ancient people, is what we have received from the prophets, especially the noble prophet of Islam, the seal of the prophets, whose message is the last and the most perfect message of our life, and what we have received from the past generations. So, these two sources, religion and inherited knowledge, are very important for us to live a better life, to live a happy life, and of course, to live a prosperous life, a felicitous life. You know, religion and inherited knowledge serve as the point of departure for every field in the sciences, arts, literature, technology, and positive laws, contracts, which have become very complicated, developed, and advanced. Let's have a break. We will be back.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Today, when a chemist starts to work on a project, he uses the results of previous discoveries and inquiries. Many of those achievements have become trivial in the eyes of the modern people and today's life. Perhaps university students today know more than chemists in the 18th or the 19th century. Today we use many works on different subjects made by great scholars in the past centuries. Without them, we would have to start from the beginning. But we are still on the way. What we know is much less than what we do not know. Thus, of course, brothers and sisters, we completely understand that we are squarely needful and dependent in our existence, our life, our knowledge. We are not independent, we are dependent. We depend initially, primarily, and originally on our Lord, who is our Creator, and who Himself is needless of what we do, of our worship, of our prayers, and whatever we do on a daily basis. We should not be proud ourselves. That's the point. We should not think we are needless or that our knowledge and understanding are perfect. No, we are not perfect and we cannot be perfect without God helping us. But of course, God has, through His prophet, shown us the right path. He has revealed the religion of Islam. And the religion of Islam is not only a religion, but there are codes. The Quran is there, the prophetic tradition is there, and also we have the inner intellect, which is also the inner prophet. And these are some of the major sources through which we can discover and which we can learn how we should live a better life, a felicitous life. Of course, the Quran, being the most important source, teaches us how to live an honest life, how to live a good life, a life characterized by faithfulness, by belief in divine and the Lord.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
The prophetic tradition is there, which is the next most authoritative source. The life and the teachings of the Holy Prophet serve as guidelines for us in order for us to live a better life and live a good life. So we come from Allah, we are from Allah, and to Him we shall return. And definitely, if this is our approach and this is our understanding of our existence, then we will begin to worship Allah, to praise Allah, to glorify Allah, and we will believe that no one other than Allah is worthy of worship. No one other than Allah is worthy of praise. No one other than Allah is worthy of glorification. This is the Muslim's worldview. And this is how it should be, based on the teachings of the Holy Quran and based on the teachings of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his family. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, He knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, He knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash, He knows. Every thought I have and every word I share, He knows.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. In Britain, almost two-thirds of tenants over the age of 65 have cut back on their general spending as a result of the cost of living crisis, and campaigners are warning that older people who do not own their homes are particularly vulnerable to rising fuel bills. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian columnist Hilary Osborne. The piece is titled, Older UK Renters Forced to Cut Back on Spending as Living Costs Soar. In Britain, almost two-thirds of tenants over the age of 65 have cut back on their general spending as a result of the cost of living crisis, and campaigners are warning that older people who do not own their homes are particularly vulnerable to rising electricity and fuel bills. Research shared with Guardian Money by the charity Independent Age puts the spotlight on the struggles of older tenants who are battling to keep up with rising household costs. Its survey found that 62% of renters over the age of 65 were having to cut back on their general spending, and that they were more likely to be doing so than their contemporaries who were homeowners. A quarter said they would not be able to afford a £10 a month increase in their living costs, while 71% said they would not be able to cover a £50 rise. More than half said they felt anxious about their finances. The state's pension increased by 3.1% last month, well below the 7% inflation rate recorded in March. Energy bills went up at the same time, and with a further increase likely this October, economists have predicted inflation could go above 10% before the end of the year. Older private renters are particularly vulnerable to soaring inflation, particularly where rents have been rising too, says Dan Wilson-Craw, the deputy director of the campaign group Generation Rent. Unlike homeowners who are likely to have paid off their mortgage, they still have housing costs. If landlords want to raise the rent to reflect the wider market, there is little current tenants can do. For retirees on fixed incomes, this cuts their disposable income or forces them to move. Independent Age's survey of 2,000 adults in England over the age of 65, of whom 391 were renting, found that 57% of tenants were cutting back on heating. 42% said they had reduced how much food and drink they were buying. And 29% were buying less vehicle fuel. Aside from those most essential purchases, 46% said that they had cut back on clothing and on footwear purchase, and 39% had reduced their social activities. Separate figures from Shelter show that between the financial years of 2020-2021 and 2021-2022, there was a 20% increase in the number of over 65s contacting its helpline who were at risk of homelessness. Francisca, a 64-year-old, and her husband Colin, a 70-year-old, say their rent has risen by more than 7% this year. They are struggling to cover it and the other bills they face, despite making cutbacks. When we go to the supermarket, we are buying the cheapest of the cheap, she says. We're taking fewer baths, fewer showers. We turn the lights off. Even on cold days, we turn the heating off. Although the couple chose to rent because, says Francisca, we're not sure what the future holds, she says it has left them vulnerable. They have lived in poor housing in the past while paying a high rent. We're evicted through a Section 21 no-fault eviction by one previous landlord, and have also had problems with letting agencies. This has made them very nervous about what happens when their contract ends next March. Their age has financial implications. At our stage of life, we have a pot of money, and if we live a long life, we have to stretch it over that time, she says. we can't go to work 9 to 5 or get new careers, so we rely on freelancing. Morgan Vine, the Independent Age Head of Policy, says older renters are left in increasingly precarious financial situations and need help and protection from the government. Our research found that older renters are one of the most at-risk groups of dropping into poverty past state pension age and are more likely to experience long-term poverty, she says. Day-to-day, we also know older renters are at an increased risk of living in poor quality homes and face higher costs and greater financial insecurity than other groups as a result. Morgan Vine says older renters have shared concerns with the charity about high rents and that their landlords could sell up at any time. With the cost of living crisis squeezing people's budgets from every angle, these worries are only going to get worse, she says. Renters make up the minority of households in England, with a head aged 65 or over, according to the latest official figures. The latest data shows there are 5.5 million owner-occupiers in this age range and 5.1 million own their home outright, which means no monthly mortgage costs. There are only 382,000 households in the private sector headed by an older person and 1 million in the social rented sector. Housing associations are allowed to put up rents by 4.1% in April, and many tenants who rent from them have seen increases. In the private rented sector, it is not easy to see what is happening to existing tenancies, but newly advertised contracts are typically costing more than a year ago. Polly Neat, the chief executive of Shelter, says older tenants are likely to be on low incomes, which would mean pressure from rising costs. With bills skyrocketing and private rents the highest on record, it's no wonder our emergency helpline is picking up the phone to older renters who, instead of preparing for retirement, are facing homelessness. No one should be forced to choose between eating or paying their rent, she says. Wilson Crawl says the state pension has risen by less than inflation, but it's worse for private renters relying on housing benefit, which has been frozen since 2020. If these people are paying higher rents, that money could be coming out of the rest of their income, and that's before we even think about rising energy prices. Wilson Crowe adds, we need a freeze on rents and another suspension of evictions to protect tenants during this crisis.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, choosing neighbors. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of choosing neighbors in the Islamic lifestyle. What we see in the Islamic teachings is that there is a lot of emphasis on having a good neighbors or being the good neighbor. But on the other hand, we have many narrations which emphasize on choosing the good neighbors for ourselves. Now, when we look at the narrations, they are divided into two different types of narrations in regards to the neighbors. One is choosing a place where you will have a good neighbors, and the second category of the narrations is that the neighbors are the means of peace in our life. Therefore, when we look at the first type of the narrations, we see that there is a lot of emphasis that when you want to rent a house, when you want to buy a house, when you are choosing a place as your residence, you need to first do a search about the people living over there. You need to have a kind of research about the people, what kind of people are there, where am I going to live, and what do I gonna have, especially obviously when we are living in the Western culture where we as a Muslim need halal meat, we need halal food. Therefore, we need to choose a place, a town where I can find something which I can consume. Obviously, if I choose a place where there is no Muslim and I cannot find halal food, there is obviously I cannot go to such place. It will put me into the hardship where Allah does not want me to bear all that hardship in my life. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of choosing neighbor in the Islamic lifestyle. We said that in the Islamic text, we find that there is a lot of emphasis on choosing a good neighbor. And what we see that in the narrations, it has been emphasized. For example, according to one of the narrations from Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, he said that a man came to the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and he said that I want to buy a house. So what should I do? And then Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam has said that when you want to buy a house, go and search the town. What kind of people do live there? And the first thing which you need to see is the house which you're going to buy. Look at the neighbors, the people who are living next to that house, how they are. If they are good, then obviously you need to buy. But if your neighbors are not good, then you should not choose to buy. You should not buy such house. Why? Because if people are not religious, if the people around you, they do not pay attention or they do not give importance to the religion, they do not respect your religion, then obviously you should not buy such a house. You should not move into such a house. And on top of that, when we are living at a place where there is a Muslims, obviously you need to choose a place where in surrounding you will find more Muslims living there. Why? Because tomorrow when your kids gonna raise and they're gonna socialize with the neighbors, they do not become non-Muslim, they do not become atheist, they do not change or convert to something which is against your teachings and beliefs. Therefore, it is important to look a place and buy a house in a place where we have other Muslims living next to us, those who are following the religion, those who give respect to the Islam, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
Former US President Donald Trump says he no longer has Trump Organization issued cell phones as New York Attorney General investigates his company. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Martin Pengelly. The piece is titled, Trump Tells Court He Lost Phones Linked to Alleged Fraud by His Company. Asked by the New York Attorney General to turn over personal cell phones to aid her investigation of alleged fraud at his company, Donald Trump said he had lost the cell phones. In an affidavit filed as part of an attempt to stop the accrual of fines for non-compliance with subpoenas, a $10,000 daily penalty, which has now reached $150,000, the former president said, I'm not currently in possession of any Trump Organization-issued cell phones, computers, or similar devices. I believe the last phone or device I was issued by the Trump Organization was a cell phone in 2015. I no longer have the cell phone in my possession, and I'm not aware of its current location. Since 1st of January 2010, I previously owned two flip phones and a Samsung mobile phone. I do not have the two flip phones in my possession, and I do not know their current whereabouts. Donald Trump said he took the Samsung cell phone with him to the White House when he was sworn in as president in 2017, but it was taken from me at some point while I was president. I do not have the Samsung cell phone in my possession, and I do not know its current whereabouts. Trump also said he now owns two personal mobile phones, an iPhone, which I have owned for several years and is for my personal use, and a new phone, which I was recently given by Truth Social just last week. Truth Social is Donald Trump's own social media platform, set up to counter what he claims to be censorship by Twitter and Facebook, which banned him after his supporters attacked the U.S. Capitol building in Washington on 6th of January 2021. Donald Trump has not been a prodigious poster of Truth Social, which has struggled. Nonetheless, in his affidavit, Donald Trump said he used his new phone exclusively for posting on Truth Social and no other purpose. I have never placed or received a call, sent or received a text message, or used this phone in any other manner. Donald Trump also said he submitted his iPhone to the New York investigation in late March to be searched and imaged, then did so again in early May, in an abundance of caution. He added, Since at least 1st of January 2010, it has been my customary practice to not communicate via email, text message, or other digital methods of communication. I also do not use a computer for work-related purposes, he said. The civil investigation of Donald Trump's financial affairs in New York is only one form of legal jeopardy faced by the former president. In one high-profile case, a grand jury has been picked in Fulton County, Georgia, where a prosecutor is examining Donald Trump's attempts to overturn his defeat by Joe Biden in the southern state of Georgia. Trump has said investigations of his financial and political affairs are politically motivated witch hunts. Nonetheless, Donald Trump's affidavit and others, filed by his lawyers in the New York case, described extensive searches for devices and documents at the Trump Organization in New York, at Trump's Mar-a-Lago home in Florida, and at his golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey. Donald Trump's claim to have lost his cell phones prompted widespread skepticism online. Preet Bharara, a former U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, who who famously refused to take a call from Donald Trump before Trump fired him, wrote, "Let he who has never lost 4 cell phones cast the first stone." Meanwhile, in other news, Elon Musk has said he will reverse Twitter's ban on the former US President Donald Trump if the Tesla boss completes the takeover of the social media platform.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of the speech delivered on April 12, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the government officials of the Islamic Republic. It should not be the case that we are popular in the beginning, but later on become tired. No, you should really remain popular. I do not mean that you should definitely continue these provincial trips until the end of your term. They might stop at some point, and this is all right. Popularity is not confined to provincial trips. Being in contact with the people and hearing from them are also manifestations of popularity. Sometimes one hears from ordinary people points that one does not hear from veteran and experienced experts, and one benefits from their viewpoints more. Being in contact with the people and popular reports have this advantage. Another point which I would like to place great emphasis on is the policies on Article 44 of the Constitution, which were announced a few years ago and which everyone spoke highly of, but they have not been acted on. Different administrations have been reminded of this, and they each said that they intended to act on it. But the policies on Article 44 have not been acted on in the true sense of the word. The economy of the country must be truly in the hands of the people, and the administration should only play its supervisory role without playing an executive role. This is very important.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today,
and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Sometimes you put a load on your own shoulder and decide to carry it from a city to another. And sometimes you put it inside a fast vehicle and you drive it. The second one is correct. The fast and active vehicle is the entrepreneur of the country. We must activate these, but you should supervise their work, formulate policies, and take care not to let a mistake be made. However, you must let them work. Both the entrepreneur, the people, and you as government officials will benefit from this. This is one issue. Another issue which is very important and which is a long-term project is the issue of economic growth without oil. Just like the countries which do not have any oil and which have a good rate of economic growth and progress, and they are not a small number either, this addictive drug, that is oil, has made us addicted since 100 years ago. It is really a difficult form of addiction.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh,
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with the reporters.
On Wednesday morning, Palestinians woke up to the tragic news of the brutal killing of Al Jazeera journalist Shireen Abu Akleh in the Jenin refugee camp. Abu Akleh was killed after being shot in the head while covering Israeli army raids in the northern occupied West Bank. Her killing drew angry reactions and condemnations in Palestine and around the world. Palestinian resistance groups, including Hamas and the Islamic Jihad, condemned in the strongest terms Israel's killing of the Palestinian journalist.
The Zionist enemy killed Shireen in cold blood in another example of their brutality against Palestinians. Killing her exposes the violent and criminal nature of the Zionist regime. We condemn this brutal crime and we demand that the Zionist regime and its leaders be brought to justice for their crimes.
Shireen Abu Akleh's extrajudicial killing is further evidence of a trend by Israeli regime forces to systematically attack journalists. During the 11-day war in 2021, Israeli warplanes bombed several buildings in Gaza, housing media companies and news channels.
The Zionist regime attacks journalists in order to silence them and to hide the truth. By targeting Palestinian journalists, the Zionist regime wants to terrorize us and stop us from exposing its war crimes to the world. The Zionist regime doesn't want us to show its ugly face.
Statistics show that Israeli regime forces have killed some 50 Palestinian journalists during the last 22 years. During the Great March of Return, Israeli snipers shot and killed two Gazan journalists and injured dozens more.
This is not the first time Israeli armed forces has targeted Palestinian journalists. They have targeted a number of them during the Great March of Return in 2018. And this is also another addition to Israeli illegal practices against Palestinian journalists by killing Shireen Abu Akleh, one of the most famous journalists in the Palestinian territories. Israel is trying to kill the truth.
Experts say Israeli forces will continue with their violations against journalists as long as the international community keeps turning a blind eye.
Israeli forces have been increasingly attacking journalists in recent years. Palestinian journalists risk their lives on a daily basis to cover the news and expose the brutality of the Israeli regime. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
With every candle symbolizing the path she lit, activists and journalists gathered in front of the Embassy of Palestine in Tehran, not just to condemn her killing by an Israeli sniper, but to show the world that Shireen Abu Akleh's footsteps will be followed. Al Jazeera's 51-year-old journalist was targeted on assignment while wearing a press jacket that made it easy for her to be identified as a journalist.
The policies of our Zionist enemies has always been clear. They are against anyone who unveils the reality on the ground. The killing of a well-known journalist like Shireen shows that they obviously don't want the world to know the truth about Palestine.
We lost a dear colleague who was killed on assignment. This is a sad day for journalists all over the world. What makes it even more tragic is that she was not even in a war zone. This proves that freedom of speech and human rights means nothing to the Zionist regime.
The Palestinian journalist was also a citizen of the United States, and many are now asking why the U.S. is silent about what they can only describe as blatant murder. Shireen was a veteran journalist and very well known, too. Obviously, the Israeli regime does not want the world to know about its crimes, and that's why they silenced her.
Well, this shows the cruelty of the Israeli regime. As you can see, if we see such an act in other countries, we may face with a strong reaction by the Western governments and also Western media. But today, inside occupied Palestine, we have seen one of the most cruel scenes that could be possible, an Israeli soldier attacked a journalist and killed him in front of the camera. And this shows that, unfortunately, by the double standards of the Western governments and also Western medias, Israeli governments can continue to kill and assassinate everyone. And this is completely against the freedom of speech and the freedom of the Palestinian people.
Shireen Abu Akleh was covering the Israeli forces raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank on Wednesday. The veteran television correspondent was a household name across the Arab world for her bold coverage of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
The tragic event has sparked outrage in Iran as well as other parts of the world. Those who have gathered in front of the Palestinian embassy in Tehran are calling for impunity for Israel to end. Gisumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
Following the killing of Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, Yemeni journalists have gathered in front of the Palestinian embassy in Sana'a to denounce Israeli crimes against Palestinian journalists and media activists.
The Yemeni Journalists Union condemns what has happened to Shireen Abu Akleh and her colleague. They were directly targeted by Israeli forces while wearing a press vest to ensure protection in the areas of conflict based on international conventions. Her killing is a flagrant violation of international law. We call on all media activists around the world to express solidarity with Abu Akleh and other colleagues in Palestine.
The Yemeni media activists denounced in the strongest terms the targeted killing of Abu Akleh by Israeli forces as she was covering an Israeli raid in the occupied West Bank.
The news of the martyrdom of Shireen was shocking, and the whole world is shocked because she was a powerful and influential figure and was able to represent a strong voice. The killing of Shireen is a turning point and the beginning of a new phase, and her blood will have a significant impact, God willing, in pushing the free people to move against the Zionist project.
Abu Akleh was a veteran Palestinian journalist for the Qatar-based Al Jazeera television news network. She was hit by a live bullet while covering an Israeli raid in the city of Jenin while wearing a press vest.
Yemeni journalist Shireen Abu Akleh will always remain a symbol of courage for all the free journalists around the world who stand against oppression, whatever it takes. They say Abu Akleh's killing is a blatant violation of international law on the protection of journalists.
Some say the recent election changes everything. Others say it doesn't. But it has changed a century of unionist political dominance.
The state was founded on the basis of a gerrymandered sectarian headcount, where it was believed there would be a permanent and perpetual unionist majority. Nationalists and Republicans were never intended or expected to get the top political job here.
The election has complicated Northern Ireland's existing problems. Sinn Féin nationalists' victory, a step towards a future United Ireland, a blow to the unionists, with the Democratic Unionists Party threatening to boycott the Stormont Assembly over a post-Brexit sea border for trade that they say undermines Northern Ireland's position in the United Kingdom.
Among the things that remain to be changed, this reminder of the decades-old sectarian divide, a wall separating communities as it has done through decades of troubles and peace. We tried to speak to people on the unionist side of it to no avail. But real change seems happening in the center. The Alliance Party has doubled its vote share among those who want to increase awareness. Cross-community efforts like those here may speak of a younger generation's desire to understand each other, regardless of which side they're on. And this is not the only center forging such ties, and they're all moving in the same direction.
So the purpose of this is trying to normalize interactions between both communities, to show young people that the culture and identity of those people based on the other side of the wall is no threat to their own culture and identity. And then a copper fastens their sense of culture, identity and space that makes it harder to feel threatened by others.
But while those threats remain, it is clear that there is a middle ground growing, thanks to these nascent cross-community ties. Saeed Puriza, Belfast, Northern Ireland.
Many believe the crime of sexually abusing a child is even more heinous than murder. The EU's executive arm, the European Commission, says 85 million child sex abuse videos and images were identified by the bloc's authorities last year, a record number.
In the EU, the reports related to the European Union, the member states, have increased with 6,000% the last 10 years. Why is this increasing? Of course, nobody knows for sure.
The Commission says it's not known exactly why these crimes are on the rise, but analysts say the EU has been allowed to expand too quickly, with some nations harbouring criminal gangs.
And now, of course, thanks to or due to open borders, are these criminal networks, they started to flourish and integrate further.
The EU Commission is proposing to establish a new agency designed to prevent child sex abuse and support victims.
At least one in five children falls victim to sexual violence during childhood in Europe. So these numbers are really embarrassing.
Anti-trafficking agencies say 2 million children recently entered the EU having fled the conflict in Ukraine, many of them unaccompanied. Gangs and individuals see an opportunity for exploitation.
The police and child protection services need to work together, plus they need to work together across borders, and there need to be better information sharing platforms.
The European Commission has a message for predators.
We are coming for you.
But critics are asking why more has not been done up to now.
Given that it promotes itself as a project designed to protect and improve the lives of citizens, rights groups say this issue seriously undermines the credibility of the European Union. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Stand
Palestinian reporter Shirin Abu Akleh was shot while covering an Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. The veteran reporter who worked for Al Jazeera's Arab language channel was shot in the face by Israeli forces despite wearing a blue flak jacket clearly marked with press. Israeli officials claim Palestinians may be responsible for the death of the 51-year-old journalist. But another reporter accompanying Abu Akleh